still, do you, do you? Or do you not think so far ahead? Cause I've been thinking about forever. Ooh. Or do you not think so far ahead? Cause I've been thinking about forever. I just thought you were cool enough to kick it. Got a beach house I could sell you in Idaho. Since you think I don't love you, I just thought you were cute. That's why I kiss you. Got a fighter jet, I don't get to fly it though. I'm lying down thinking about you. Ooh, no, no, no. I've been thinking about you. You, no, no, no. I've been thinking about you. Do you think about me still? Do you, do you?
You're listening to the R&B Collective.
That's just a guest today. This is We have Lewis here on my right.
Should I say my name?
You can say your name, Lewis.
Hi, I'm Lewis. Can you hear me?
So, Lewis, tell us a little bit about yourself.
A little bit?
Okay. What do you like to do?
I like to do a lot of things. I wouldn't say there's any one thing in particular that I like to do. I like to do what other people are doing. It's usually fun. I like to do what you guys do. I like being on the radio. You know. Do you want me to, like...
So, Lewis, where did you grow up prior to coming to Hampshire?
I grew up in Midcoast, Maine.
Okay.
Camden area, right by the ocean.
Did you like it there?
Oh, I love it there.
Yeah. What kind of activities did you partake in on a daily basis?
Camden's where the mountains meet the sea. So, you know, mountain things, sea things. I sail a lot. I ski. I hike. Most things that people from Maine do.
Yeah, this is true. I'm from Maine too, so I can kind of relate a little bit.
Alright, you're basically from New Hampshire, though.
Yeah, that's true. I'm pretty south there. You know, I almost lived up that way, but, you know, my parents couldn't decide. Anyway.
So, let's talk about music on this show. What type of music do you like to listen to, Lewis?
Pretty much anything. I don't have any huge musical influences. I mean, I guess when I was growing up, my dad listened to a lot of CCR and a lot of Led Zeppelin, classics, and my mom listened to so much ABBA, so
nice.
Also that. You know, a lot of the music I get is just from other people, like friends and family, so my collection of music is just this big melting pot of things. I've been getting into more contemporary singer-songwriters, like Danny Schmidt, Parker Millsap, Josh Ritter, other people. Can play some.
Do you yourself play any guitar along with this singer-songwriter listening to this type of music? Has that sparked an interest to be, you know, playing this music in your free time? Even if it's not, like, a serious endeavor you would partake in, it's just something you do.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Usually, you know, I've been trying for a while to learn guitar.
Okay.
I've played with you guys a little bit.
Yes.
But, you know, when I do decide to pick up the guitar and, like, you know, what I decide to do with it, I usually end up learning songs that other people have already written, rather than writing my own songs, because I don't really feel like super proficient or capable of, like, you know, coming up with my own chord progressions and playing them well.
So when you're playing these songs on guitar, what kind of singer, what kind of artist are you in particularly playing?
I usually gear more towards just fingerstyle guitar. Pretty mellow stuff, not a lot of strumming or, like, intense vocals. I don't sing very often, but I'd say that usually the songs that I choose to learn are songs that I want to at some point be able to sing as well.
Okay. What kind of, is there any particular artist that really embodies your way of doing finger-picking guitar that you practice?
I'm just trying to think about some of the songs that I've learned. I've learned some Bob Dylan.
Fantastic. big fan.
Some Wood Brothers.
Okay, I don't know.
Let's see. Yeah, I don't know that many songs, actually.
Well, Mountain and I were hoping that you'd be willing to share with our listeners some of the music you do listen to, and even, you know, practice on guitar.
Yeah, definitely.
Is there anything in mind that you can think of that you might want to play?
Yeah, I'll play a song.
Okay, cool.
It's by Danny Schmidt. Probably the guy I listen to the most at the moment. His album Parables and Primes is it's pretty sweet. It's called Dark Eyed Prince.
Dark Eyed Prince.
It's so, kind of a downer, but...
Yeah. What about it do you really enjoy?
Oh, man. I think the thing I enjoy the most about Danny Schmidt is just... He's pretty unbelievable lyrically.
Okay.
And that kind of takes, like, a the foreground in all of his songs, more so than the guitar or any other accompanying instruments.
Do you relate to his lyrics in any way? Is there anything about what he's saying that you were just like, yeah?
I don't know if I really empathize a lot with what he's saying, but okay. You know, I don't even know how to describe it, actually. He's just, like, very good at... he has, like, really vivid imagery that he uses, and, yeah.
Cool. Well, without further ado, Dark Eyed Prince.
Once upon a time, in a kingdom ill-defined, a dark-eyed prince sat sideways on his throne. And he cast aside the thoughts of his princess long and lost, decided he'd live principally alone. And so he built himself a castle made of stumbling blocks and bricks. And he filled the moat with crocodile tears and other tricks. But he forgot to build the doorway, he forgot to build the gate, so he had to build the catapult and just a knock it off. An adventure out at night, being jeweled and erudite. And he'd ride from town to town, farm to farm. And he'd laugh at all the sheep and at the company they'd keep. And he'd burn down all the churches and the barns until he'd find the proper damsel. Then he'd play the proper prince. And he'd lead her home with apples and promise on a stick until she'd fall upon the pillow. Then he'd fall upon the dawn and he'd close his eyes to hers and then just dream that she was gone. And he swore upon the crown that he'd melt desire down. And he boarded up his windows and his eyes. But he still could hear the sound of the rain upon the ground. And he still could feel his face against the sky. And how the birds and how the bees, they each took turns upon their knees. And how to take me if you dare to turn. Thank you if you please. And how the nectar in the flowers, how the flowers on the vine, where they turn his blood from fever into honey juice and wine. And he knew that it was true in the crumbs that nature threw, and that ever after always ends the tale. And somewhere in disguise there was a girl with lantern eyes who could fill the darkest shadows with detail. So we'd build another tower just to tear another down. And he'd lay a trail of candles from his castle into town. But if you go there, please be careful. And if you leave there, please be quick. Because he'll rob your eyes of color and your balls to make more bricks.
that was Dark Eyed Prince. Thank you, Lewis, for sharing that with us. So when that was playing, Lewis, we were conversing a little bit, talking about this artist, and kind of could you share a little bit more why this song matters to you, and then maybe talk a bit about how you said there's another song that kind of transitions well into it.
I'm not super good at analyzing songs or song lyrics, but sometimes a song just resonates with you. And you know, when I listen to a lot of Danny Schmidt songs, this one in particular, it's just it just resonates. I would say that I could empathize with this song more than maybe some of his other songs.
Okay.
You know, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know. All sometimes feel like a dark-eyed prince.
Just kidding. There you go. Cool. So you said there was another song by him.
Yeah. It's off one of his later albums.
Okay.
It's called "Girl with Lantern Eyes." He actually mentioned that in his previous song. I don't know if there's any direct correlation between the two, but I definitely think I think they complement each other.
Okay.
Pretty well.
We'd love to hear that too.
Awesome.
So Danny Smith again with "Girl with Lantern Eyes."
Understand her in all her grace and grandeur, while flames that only fan her eyes fall. Oh. take the coals and turn down the steady breath of learning right and fall. Cause surely as tomorrow as yesterday to borrow the light to follow through the gates, through dark and ancient paintings of children's rants and ravings, her lantern eyes my light, her lantern eyes my light, her lantern eyes my light the way. Her lantern eyes my light the way.
All right, that was Girl with the Lantern Eyes. thank you, Lewis, for sharing that with us.
Yeah.
We really enjoy your music. That was, I've never heard of him before, and I like his style, his singing. His lyrics are brilliant, really well constructed. For me, as someone who's trying to write music right now, that's very kind of just motivates me and gives me inspiration. So, this is kind of some of your musical interests. Past, like, music, I know that's a part of the show. We'd also like to discuss another thing that kind of brings all of us together as friends in our free time here, which is magic. The Gathering, the card game that we play when we need a break from our studies.
Or to avoid our studies.
Perhaps. Hopefully not. And I don't know, I just find Magic is, you know, the father of all trading card games. It was made, I believe, in 1996. So it's been around for over 20 years
now. It's older than we are.
It's older than us. There's a lot of stuff out there. You know, there's cards that are worth, that the Black Lotus card is worth,
like, $40,000.
$40,000. So there's, it's a huge
nice hole. Card.
It's a very big thing. And I know I got into Magic the Gathering when I was at boys camp at Chewonky when I was like 10 years old is when I first experienced it. And I don't know, Mountain, when was the first time you experienced it?
I think I played Magic the Gathering for the first time when I was 9.
Wow.
Yep, it was taught by a friend of mine in my homeschool group. Yeah.
That's how it always goes. There's just one person. They show you how it works, and then you realize, like, oh, wow, there's basically one trading card store in any given town, and there's always one dude who works there. Like,
I'll teach you.
Yeah.
Yep, I won my first game with a River Mamba 2-1.
Nice.
No one else drew land.
Yeah. Yeah, my older cousin got me into it probably when I was, like, you know, sometime in, like, elementary school. And, yeah, I think just recently, a lot of us have realized, like, oh, shit, all of us used to play Magic when we were younger. Like, why don't we still do that?
Right.
It's just, like, it was really funny happening.
Well, I remember coming up to, the third floor lounge where, Mountain lives and you were, and you guys were playing Magic one time, and I was like, oh, I play this. I'll have to get my decks from home, because I haven't touched them in years, and then we started playing again. And, like, I feel like as friends, that brought us much closer as Magic, And it's a pretty complicated game. Like, you can't just understand it,
yeah,
like, playing it once. It's not like playing, like, hearts with traditional cards or, like, poker.
Yeah.
There's tons of abilities and, you know, ways cards kind of, like, complement each other. And there's a whole array of factors that create a deck, which is really fascinating to me.
Yeah, it's not just, like, we're playing it for, like, sentimental value. I think that definitely plays a part. But also, you know, it's just, like, it's got a lot going on. It's, yeah, it's pretty complicated. There's a lot of stuff you can do, and there's no definitive end to it, because you basically just have, like, thousands of cards, and you just have to bring them together in some sort of cohesive way. You know.
Yeah. There's really an immense amount of possibilities of things that you can do with just a bunch of cardboard, which is kind of ridiculous. I think there's never been a more apt name for anything than Magic the Gathering.
That's true.
Nothing has made my friends and I gather more than Magic.
That's true.
Maybe.
My grandma calls it Magic the Happening.
People in our hall probably call it Magic the Please Stop Happening.
Yeah.
So when was it that you stopped playing Magic for bunch?
I'd say like fifth grade.
Played a bunch up until fifth grade?
Yeah, I'd say from like third to fifth grade were my golden years.
I think I was a late bloomer then in comparison. my golden Magic years were probably like fourth or fifth grade. I was homeschooled during that time, so I'm not really sure what the grades lined up. But through like freshman year,
nice.
a long run on the cards.
You know, we play it super casually. I'd say it's more of a social thing than it is anything else. But it's pretty insane that there are people that play it for like prizes of like over $100,000.
Yep.
Like, it's got this whole other element to it where it's like, you know, very casual, very competitive. You know, if you were to buy a deck that you would play in like a tournament, it'd be like $1,500. So it's like, there are people out there really investing so much time and money into this thing.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. There are also people out there, like, I have friends at home who have made their summer job buying and selling Magic cards, buying them like stocks, buying them at a low and selling them at a high.
That's how I always convince myself that it's alright for me to buy a card. It's like, you know, it's an investment.
It's an investment that I'm probably going to keep forever and then lose eventually.
Or spill milk on. Too many times.
Too many times. Spilled milk on the cards. Spilled anything. Just spilled stuff on the cards. So we're going to transition over to a song.
Oh, we should also note that potentially later in the show, one of Mountain's friends, Hal,
yeah,
is going to potentially give us a call.
Ask Lewis a few things about his time with Magic cards.
I don't want to bore you guys with Magic metagame, you know? We don't have to talk about it for too long.
We don't talk about it for too long, but we'll talk about it. We enjoy talking about it. And so does Hal. So, this is Lucy by Still Woozy and Odie.
Safe is your love. You always know, start. could paint the sky like a photo, yeah. And baby, we should never know. If we don't, if we won't try, we could live a life full of color. If you won't, let me know. We'll escape the pigeonhole. It's our world, so go, girl, let's get it on.
Well, I know there's only time, but let me see what's on your mind. I could see what's on your mind.
What's on your mind?
And that was Lucy by Still Woozy and Odie.
Were you paying attention to the bass line in that?
I was a little bit, yeah. The bass line's really nice. I'm a sucker for some groovy bass, for sure.
When does your bass come?
Yeah, I got a new bass coming in the mail on Friday. Super excited. It's kind of unreal to buy things online because you just... You click a button or two and it just shows up.
Definitely doesn't feel real.
Yeah, especially on campus when you just go over to the mail room and someone just hands it to you. They're like, here you go, it's yours. Take it. And it's like a while later because the mail room sucks. It's a bad system. Always messing me up.
Man, I might work in the mail room.
It'd be pretty fun to work in the mail room.
Yeah.
I'd rather be a monitor though because you can just do your homework.
True.
It's pretty sweet.
Do you have a work study?
I do not have a work study, but I'm going to be getting one next semester, probably.
Yeah, that's what I told myself going into this semester. I think I'm still gunning for the pool van repairman.
Pool van repairman?
Yep, it rhymes.
That's about it? That's what's the
opinion. Yeah, I looked at the job description, it was like, can check oil. Like, does know how to drive.
So, the pool van repairman, is it there's a van that goes around and fixes pools and you repair that van?
I couldn't tell you. I could not
tell you. Did you see a poster for this?
I saw it online when I was looking at the job catalog.
For the school?
Yeah. It's like listed as a job the school offers.
Pool van. You just check its oil down then. Full time somehow.
Full time. Full time. 40 oil hours checking. A week.
Just checking oil. You just pull it in and out.
Our friend Daniel was telling me about this job the other day called a trash monitor. where you basically are just a dude who stands in front of the trash can and recycling bins and be like, that goes there. That goes there. Nope, don't put that there. Like,
where?
I don't know. Probably wherever there are multiple options for you to dispose of your things.
I mean, there's multiple options, like, especially in Saga, there are multiple options right there, and I have never been monitored.
I know. Maybe it's, like, an initiative that they're trying to take.
Trash monitor initiative.
The TMI.
The TMI.
Oh, man. So.
So, Lewis and I, are building a synth together, which is kind of a fun project. Mm-hmm. I've never built a synth before. Never built any electronics like a synth before. It's been kind of eye-opening in the realm of
like
weird puzzles.
Yeah.
Super annoying problems that you don't understand.
Yeah. We've been doing it for our creative electronics class. It's like a final project. And, you know, I had no idea what to expect. I had no idea what was going on when we started this project, and now feel like I have even less of an idea what's going on.
Got an idea of what's going on, but not an idea of what's going wrong.
Yeah, true.
But this hasn't gone right yet, but no. We're getting there, for sure.
I think, I'm not even convinced that we're making progress, because it's like, we'll find one problem, you know, fix that problem, but then that will just be the, like the catalyst for another problem.
Nice. Now that we can get the power to run through it, it gets really hot and stops working.
I think we both have burns on our pointer fingers for feeling the.
You gotta test to see if it's hot by poking it, or at least that's our chosen method. Yeah, it's probably the worst method of testing if something's too hot.
I think smell checks are always good.
Yep, you smell it, but then you gotta figure out which one's hot, so you still have to poke them. It's a bad method, but a good process. For sure. I think I've learned a lot from building some electronics and gained a much larger respect for electricians and anything electronic, even the simplest stuff. It's like probably is hard to build.
Yeah, it's like, you know, I'd say I've built a decent amount of things in my life.
Yeah.
But they've all been very like physical, and you know the interactions that are happening, you
mechanical
can see
motion
and visualize, and it's like this is just. You just have to trust your process.
Yep.
And there's like a lot of conceptualizing that goes into it, but at the same time, it's like this weird balance between conceptualizing and like trial and error. And it's kind of hard to know what the best route to take is.
Yeah, for sure.
I think we're definitely figuring it out, though.
Yeah, as we go, we're getting better at that, for sure.
And so I don't know if we touched on this, but our design for it is to basically have... an old guitar body, and to have three touch strips that run their way up the neck where the strings would be. And so those are basically, you know, controlling the voltage that we're sending into our synth and out the other end. So it'll play not like a guitar, but it'll at least have some element of familiarity to it.
Yeah, definitely. I'm definitely most familiar with that shape of instrument. It's going to be interesting to not have the strings as the same tactile response. And not have the sound of a guitar come out. Pretty much all sorts of weird sounds that will make.
Yeah.
Hopefully some of them will be pleasing to listen to. We haven't even made a sound yet, so...
True. So, we have made triangle and square waves.
Yeah, we have made those.
For like 8 seconds before something
burns up. But that's okay.
It's also going to be interesting to only have one hand engaged. Touch strips.
Definitely.
And so it's like, you know, if there were some way to put some sort of percussive element or just like something that your other hand could do.
Yeah, definitely. There's definitely room to touch something else with your other hand.
Yeah.
And make it make something happen for sure. That hasn't been quite conceptualized fully yet there in our design process.
It's also, it's one of those projects where it's like, as long as you can establish some sort of base, it's very easy to add to that. It's like we have the synthesizer, we have the touch strips, you know, we're not going to have to reconfigure anything in a super extreme way to add to it. Like, I don't know if that's true.
We'll see.
It seems like you'd be able to augment it with
other things. That seems like how it should be. It's not always that way.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. We have, 4 weeks until...
Yeah, 4 or something like that. Thanksgiving breaks in there, but that doesn't quite count because... I'm going home.
Yeah.
Gonna work on it for that time.
Yeah, so we'll see. And we want it to be, powered so it can run through an amp and not just into a computer as, like, a MIDI controller. So it's, like, it's very much its own instrument.
Yeah, for sure. Its own analog.
And so that's why we chose to make it analog and not digital.
Yeah, for sure. It's a good plan. I'm excited about it. Mm-hmm. So we're gonna... play the song High Time by Legs, and then come back to you with some more talk about Magic the Gathering.
Thank you.
That was High Time by Legs. So, Lewis, what's your favorite magic deck that you've ever built? What are some concepts behind its creation?
Okay. I'd say my favorite is probably, I have like it's an artifact deck. I don't know if that means anything to anybody out there, but, basically, it's the one that I feel like is the most my own, because the way a lot of the cards are designed is they're supposed to kind of fall into certain tribal decks or like certain ways to be played. So it's definitely easier to play decks where all the cards were meant to be together in them, but in this one, I would say that the cards in it are from, you know, pre-2000 all the way up to, like, the latest set that just came out, and so it's very, like, it's got a lot of stuff going on, and the interactions that happen are really kind of obscure, and can happen between a lot of different things that you wouldn't necessarily expect. So that's why I think, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's kind of hard to play against. I probably spent too much money and time on it, but who's to say?
What's the total monetary value of that stack of cards?
I'd say, like, $300, maybe.
Whoa.
But to be fair, I didn't spend $300 on it. I'd say that younger me probably spent a good amount of money on it. I'm not going to count that. And
past you isn't this
no,
you.
No, that's not me. And I also traded, you know, when I found all my Magic cards in the attic of my house, I went through a lot of them and found out that, you know, a bunch of them were actually worth a decent sum of money. And so my friends kind of did the same thing when they pulled theirs out, so we just, you know, made a lot of trades and exchanges. So that's how I got a lot of them as well.
Mm, nice. Have you ever sold a chunk of Magic cards?
Mm-mm.
Never sold a chunk?
No, I probably should.
When I was little, I sold a chunk of my cards, all my rarest, most valuable cards, just a big old stack of them for like $40 to some older kid who knew how much they were worth, and I did not know.
Yeah, probably worth like a couple $100.
Yeah, regret that to this day.
I have,
I was super psyched about it at the time. I was like, I'm gonna go buy Legos! Yes!
I remember, you know, I used to go to some tournaments in my local magic shop, and there's like this interesting mixing of like, you know, kids my age. I'd say it's like 50% kids my age, 50% like 40-year-olds. I just have this vivid memory of getting this sweet card during this tournament, having this big older guy come up to me and basically like swindle me out of it.
Yeah.
Wow, what kind of person?
Oh, nice. Did you see that 8-year-old who just pulled that sweet card? I'm gonna go convince him that it's not sweet, convince him that I want it, but it's not sweet, and take it from him.
What am
for
I
like
supposed
$3.
To do? It's like super intimidating. Like, this is not worth it. You can
super
just
scary,
have it.
Dudes. You can probably smell them coming from across the room.
Yeah, there's definitely a certain stench that those stores accumulate
there's
over
the
years.
Smell of the stores. The stores have a smell for sure.
I had the weirdest experience last year where, you know, we've been talking about the older people who kind of dwell in these magic shops, and you know, I haven't thought about, you know, what they're up to now or what they actually do for a living or anything like that, but I was at my cousin's friend's house, and he had his new neighbor over for dinner, and it was this dude that ran the magic shop when I was younger. I was like, oh,
what are the odds
wow,
of that, dude?
That's crazy. He was still kind of a dick, so that was good to know that it kind of transcended just how he was inside of the shop. I don't know.
Did you learn any strange facts about this guy?
Yeah, he had a kid. He had a baby.
Oh, it looks like we've got a caller on the line.
He also smoked a lot of weed.
Hello? Hello, Hal. You're on air.
Oh, wonderful. Lewis, I was just wondering what your favorite format is, what your favorite sort of competitive deck from that format would be.
Sorry, what was that?
Hal is wondering your favorite format and what your favorite competitive deck for that format would be.
Okay. I would say my favorite format is Modern. It's debatably less expensive because the cards that you buy are going to be worth a good chunk of money for more than just like, you know, however many sets it takes for it to cycle out of standard. So I'd say Modern is probably my favorite format. I'd say my favorite competitive Modern deck would be, that's a tough one, probably Affinity.
Love your artifacts, don't you?
I do. I was just talking about my artifact deck earlier on this show. What about you?
I'd say modern too, for a different reason though. I really love to brew really wacky decks.
That's also
and
true.
I feel like modern sort of gives you the greatest spread of cards without having certain cards be too like broken that they overpower other cards.
Yeah, definitely. Have you seen a big part of competitive modern is just combo decks. It's like, yeah. Like Krug Clan, Ironworks, and all that stuff where you just like don't interact with the other person at all and you just do your own thing and you either win or you lose.
I enjoy playing sort of combo decks like that, but I don't like really like watching them, other people play them.
No, it's also not any fun for the other person that you're playing against.
Yeah.
So that's definitely something I consider, like, when I'm, like, making a deck. It's, you know, I could probably make this, when I'm deciding what kind of deck to make, it's like, what kind of deck is going to be fun for other people to play as well? Because I don't really play competitively. I don't know. What's your favorite? What were you going to say?
Oh, yeah, I think the first deck I ever built was, like, when I didn't know what was going on, I built a land destruction deck, which was both not fun to play against or fun to play with.
Yeah.
So I retired that one quite quickly.
Yeah, it's pretty annoying. I definitely wouldn't want to play that.
Lewis, could you tell Hal a little bit about your Demonic Pact deck?
Okay. Have you ever heard of the Demonic Pact card?
Yeah, I have.
So I have a deck that's built around that. It's pretty interesting to play. It doesn't run any creatures. It's super flawed because Demonic Pact is the only win condition in the entire thing. And basically it's just like, you know, just destroy the other person's board until it's like the fourth turn where you lose the game. But there's this enchantment that swaps one of your permanents with one of your opponents, so you just give it to them in the beginning of their upkeep, they just lose.
Yeah, I've seen very into that deck. It's a fun one.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it definitely kills you about half the time. That's one of those decks that's actually fun to play, and it's like the Demonic Pact is a card that actually interacts with the board a decent amount. Or not with the board, but just with the game, you know, it's like card advantage and direct damage and life gain. So it does have this element of, like, interacting with the other person.
Hal, when did you start playing Magic the Gathering? How old were you?
I started a lot, like, later than you guys did. I learned, I think it was about 2 years ago now. But when I first started, I just kind of played with all my friends' decks. So I didn't really know a ton about it. I didn't really, really get into it until I started to buy my own cards. I like figured out what was going on.
Yeah, that's
more fully.
That's a big jump.
Yeah,
to
that's
make.
One of the best and worst parts of Magic: The Gathering is that buying the cards is so fun. Nothing better than buying the cards.
That being said, there's nothing worse than spending like $5 on a booster pack and getting a card that's worth 3 cents.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't make sense to buy the packs, but. They're so irresistible.
So irresistible.
Yeah, you're always waiting for that one time when you'll open a pack and there'll be a $50 card.
Yeah.
It'll never happen, but...
Never.
No, that happened to me the other day. I got a super expensive card. It was all foily, and it was worth, like, $50. It was Lyra Dawnbringer.
Do you get a foil Lyra?
Oh, is it Lyra?
Yeah, I think it's Lyra.
Yeah, I did. It was worth, like, $50 when I pulled it. It's worth maybe 25 now. Should have definitely sold it.
It's okay, dude. You still made 5-fold on your pack.
Yeah.
That's what pay for none of the other ones still.
Yeah. It's like I try to use that to justify me buying packs. Like, you know, this good thing happened one time, so, you know, maybe it'll happen again.
Kind of like gambling, to be honest.
It's exactly like
Never
gambling.
Can I walk through the checkout aisle that has all the packs in it without snagging one. It's like adding $3 to my purchase, like... 3 to 5. I don't have to worry about that.
Hal, you ever curious about how much money you've spent on Magic cards?
Sometimes. I feel like most of the time I'd rather just not think about it.
Yeah.
Just not know.
Yeah.
I like to think about how much money I have in the actual cards, because then I feel like I've got something
that's super reasonable.
You feel like you're very wealthy.
I'm so rich.
You should see my net worth. I may be broke, but...
Yeah. Do you think you're ever going to sell them at any... You think when you're, like, 40, you're still going to have them?
Maybe. I don't know. I don't see myself, like, getting out of magic in the foreseeable future, but it'll happen at some point.
Who knows?
I feel like I've heard this... like, cards from so long ago are now so expensive that I feel like I'll just hang on to them just in case something happens.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really should have bought one of the large packs and just, it's like Legos. You gotta get into buying new things and then never opening the box. Like, I don't know who does that, who just buys something and never opens it, but whoever they are, they're geniuses, because if you have an unopened thing that's very old, people will pay so much for it.
Yeah, but at the same time, like, sure, you're gonna get some money, but that's so not fun. Like, if I had an old box of Magic cards that was worth like $500, I'd probably rather like still open it and draft it than just sell it.
Yeah, I'd still draft Alpha.
Even if I had a closed
maybe
box. Not Alpha. But also, you know, I was not into it for a while, and then I got back into it, so I feel like I can never justify just like getting rid of it, because I'm sure at some point in my life, if I am out of it, I'm going to want to get back into it again.
Yeah, and I'm going to try to play it with my kids. Yeah. If I have kids, get them into it. Then they'll spend all my money on it, and I'll be okay with that. I'll also look at them.
What are you up to now, Hal? Where are you in your life?
Right now? I'm just sort of in my dorm, chilling.
Okay, so you're in school. Yeah, that was my first question.
I'm going climbing later.
Oh, nice.
Tonight?
Probably indoor, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, that's a
stupid question. Where do you go to school?
Stevens Point, UW Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
Oh, Wisconsin.
Back in Wisco.
Nice. Yeah. Never been to Wisconsin.
Me and Hal were very excited. I actually went to high school with Hal. We were very excited because Stevens Point is our favorite author used to teach there. We thought he still taught there. Patrick Rothfuss, the writer of the Kingkiller Chronicles, and The Name of the Wind, used to teach at Stevens Point, but he retired, and we didn't know that, so Hal was pretty excited to try to become homies with him, but it's too bad.
You just have to just go to all the alumni
meetings. You just gotta find his house.
Yeah, the first couple of days I kept trying to find him in, like, staff meetings and... And then I looked it up and he didn't work here anymore.
The other funniest thing is there's nothing Rothfuss hates more than fans. He hates them. Thinks they're the worst.
But and he's still successful.
I was going to pretend that he hadn't read the book for a while. Get in the vibe, maybe play D&D with him or something.
Oh man, I bet he writes some gnarly campaigns.
Gnarly campaigns, I'm sure.
I just found out that my uncle plays D&D. I was so stoked to hear that. That was hilarious.
That's awesome.
Man, we should just play D&D on here sometime.
That's
a D&D
show. That's a fantastic idea. All right, in the future of a midnight or a 6 o'clock walk on the mountain, a D&D session, for sure. We have a 4-hour set. There'll be a lot of clattering of dice rolls, heavy breathing, audible perspiration.
Audible stench.
Audible stench. It'll come through the mics.
Do you play D&D, Hal?
A little bit. Yeah. I don't think I've played a campaign with Mountain, but...
Things got too hectic at the end of the year.
Yeah. It's hard to find the time for it.
Yeah, it's
super it's a huge time, like, suck.
It's not, you can't really get into it if you're just playing it for, like, half an hour, an hour. It's like a solid 8-hour block.
It's like, you need to prepare for a good 12 hours and then play for 4 hours each week for a few months. to really get what you're putting in out of it.
Yeah, I've never actually, you know, can you even finish a campaign?
Yeah, you can define a stopping point, or you can just play forever.
Yeah, I've only played a handful of times. It was, like, super casual. I only played for a couple hours, but I can see how that's just a hole you can get sucked right into.
Yeah. super deep hole, vacuuming deep hole.
All right.
Well, I think we're going to transition to our last song. It was lovely to talk to you, Hal. Thanks for being our first caller on a 6 o'clock walk on the mountain.
First caller, wow. I feel like mentally underdressed.
Hal, we need to Skype sometime. Skype and play magic. Did you bring your decks to school with you?
Oh, of course I did.
All right, sweet. So did I. It was such a relief to find other people who had brought their decks with them.
Oh. I've not found anybody here who plays Magic, unfortunately.
Oh, man, Hal, that is such a disappointment. There's a million people here who play Magic.
And it's just conveniently all the people we already hang out with. All right. Yeah, I'm going to put you down now.
All right.
Thanks for the chat. See ya.
Bye.
All right. And now. And now we're going to leave you with Data and Picard.
We were just hanging out last night and just cycling through some songs. And this song just found its way in.
Just found its way into our lives super, super slickly, actually. Had us bump into it.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was in Russian originally, but then I realized it was actually just a remix of Jean-Luc Picard from Star Trek just saying his lines.
Yeah, that's so funny.
And so I will leave you with that. I hope you enjoy Data and Picard by Pogo.
You know, back when I was in the Academy, we would follow every toast with a song.
Cheer up. interesting twist.
Hmm.